Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Now, I know I've spent 33 years in radio, and I also said that I only consider 16 of those years to have been actually worthwhile. And what I mean by that is the first 17 I spent spinning records. And I, in the present climate of radio, personally think that to be a very large waste of time. Now, there are others who do it, and they do it really well, and my hat's off to them, because they can make it sound as if they are really enjoying listening to the same records over and over again. And that's that. I'm not kidding you when I tell you I think that that is an art, and it's a talent, and I couldn't do it anymore, because I had this idea that I wanted to be real. That's why a lot of the comedy that we do in the show walks the edge of reality. It walks right on the edge of real. How else is it that we can get people to call the show who believe that there's a guy out there who thinks witches and goblins get sucked into jet turbines on Halloween night? How can you get an airline pilot to call in and seriously discuss that? How do you do it? How do you get a guy to call in and seriously discuss a man who believes, you know, that playing the Chinese national anthem while his Chinese food distributor brings in noodles to his grocery store is a good marketing technique? How do you do that? Well, people say to me, I don't know how you do it. Well, how you do it is this. You simply put yourself in the shoes of that man. How would, and two things have to be clear right off the bat. He's not insane, and he really believes that this is a good idea. Now, how would a man who's not insane, who really believes that piping the Chinese national anthem to the PA system of his grocery store while the guy that supplies him with his chop suey is bringing the new supply in is a good way of making friends? How would that man talk? How would he communicate himself? Now, most people don't even want to when I say most people, I would imagine that most comics or most people who are humorists don't want to really work that hard, or they don't think it's possible. Probably they don't think it's possible to actually sell that to anybody. And certainly I don't think there's anyone that believes you can sell it to anyone for the greater amusement of everybody else. So this show goes way beyond Candid Camera or the Jerky Boys. What we do is we take a premise and we make it as believable as we can. I've always been in love with reality as being the funniest thing of all. To me, reality cracks me up. I don't laugh as hard as I do at just stuff that happens. Just people, you know. I mean, you see some guy running through an airport, sweating. Like the guy that ran up to me once when I was working the toy department at Fedco when I was in college, and it was Christmas season, and the guy runs up to me, sweating, and his tie askew. Hey, do you have the doll? It's a little... It was Christmas Eve, I'll never forget. And it was obviously a father who wanted to get a toy, and he wanted to make sure he got it before the store closed. He's getting it for his daughter or something. It's the doll! There's a string in it! The man... He didn't say it. I swear to God, I didn't know what he was talking about, but somehow I found this doll. Or my friend one night... I'm having a party at my house. I pick up the phone, and on the other end is my friend Bob. Now, he knows there's a party, and this is what he says. Hello? Yeah, Phil, that was it. I didn't understand a word the guy said, but he showed up like 15 minutes later. Is there a party? You guys, it's my girlfriend. So to me, those are all the things that I kind of file away. But you got to believe in the art of acting. That's how you sell it. So if I get a character on my show who says that there are werewolves, that they can be killed with silver bullets, that I have to get a silver bullet and a silver gun, and I have to kill it on Halloween night, and I have to do this in lieu of the fact that we are raising money for a girl's, cleft palate for surgery. How do you make people believe that that guy's serious? Well, you have to create him as a serious person. You have to make him into a believable person. It goes beyond being a broad, sketchy kind of comedy. It becomes satire, but it's more than that. It's a piece of theater. It's almost drama. And the greatest thing the thing that I'm the most proud of is this. I get a call from somebody who says the following. I thought at first that this was a joke. But now, this guy must be crazy. Now, it's usually the opposite. They usually say, I thought you were serious at first, but I realize now you must be. And why do they say that? It's because we sell it. The premise comes out. The guy believes in werewolves. The person's laughing, but now she's listening, and this guy's not, he really believes it. And not only that, but he's giving reasonable and rational premises as to why he believes it. And not only that, he sounds real. He sounds cogent. He sounds like a person who is in business. He that's what we do on our show. So because of my love of reality, from the very beginning in this business, I realized that in many ways I was working against the flow. Music radio, when I got into it, was long past the years of disc jockeys picking their own music. Those days were dead. By 1973, when I got into the business, we had what were called card files. You'd go to the cards, and if the clock said play an A cut, we'd go to the A section, and we'd pull out one of ten songs. And then the clock was go to the B file, and you'd go in there, and maybe there's 30 songs. And we were always waiting for the like double X file, because that was 100 songs, and we could really dig deep and find something that we liked. And naturally, we all played the same song, you know. So there might be like Death Walks Behind You by Atomic Rooster. Every disc jockey had already played it six times on his show, right? Stairway to Heaven, twice. And generally played by the chick in middays. Because she didn't want to lose her gig. She wanted to do exactly what the program director said, because she was the female. And the first thing a woman doesn't want to do in those days in radio, she didn't want to get fired. So she played it right by the book. She was on 10 to 2. She was the chick. And she played all the songs that we didn't want to play. Stairway to Heaven. Because the Night by Patti Smith for the 9 millionth freaking time. Or, of course, the ever popular The Heart of Rock and Roll, Huey Lewis. And meanwhile, the rest of us are digging in there for you. Here it is. Third Rock from the Sun, Hendrix. I got to put that. No, the guy before you played it, you can't play it. Ah, screw it. It's 4 a.m. Who cares? Couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't do that. Couldn't stand it any longer. I decided I'd get into morning radio because I could be funny. I could do shtick. I was terrible. The worst morning man you ever heard in your life. It was the bleakest, most abysmal period of my life doing morning radio. Because I hated getting up early, I wasn't funny at all at 6 a.m., and I had to play all these songs, and they didn't really want you to do a whole lot of bits. They wanted you to play songs. It was really about the music. And by 1990, I was ready to blow my freaking brains out of my head, and I had no money. I'd been fired three times, and the engine in my truck had blown up. My bicycle had been stolen. Seriously, and the reason why I mention that is, how else was I going to get to the post office to mail off tapes and resumes? So I was done, man. And on top of that, I was 37. Not exactly a spring chicken. And that's why I said I got to get into talk radio. So I did that, but it never occurred to me that there would be an end game for talk radio. That I would reach a point in this business that I was maxed out. Not so much maxed out as I had reached the full limit of what I was going to be able to do. And that there wasn't anywhere else to go. And when I finally began to get these calls from the television people and from the animation people, and I began to make friends in that community, and believe me when I tell you, I'm not walking into this thinking I'm going to be some freaking superstar. Believe me when I tell you that. I'm hoping I can just make a living. That's number one. Number two, I'm hoping I can make a comfortable living. And number three, I'm hoping I can get into some project that will pay me enough money where I can support myself for a fair number of years. And, oh, yeah, on top of all of that, I'd like to do something that I'm proud of. Now, those are probably the requisites for any gig that any of us has in our lives. But it's really important for me, and I was able to do that in radio. I want to do that in front of the camera. I think what I've done here on the radio show, I need to get in front of a camera to do it, because I can't keep putting it off. Now, when we come back, I will give you the date when this show's last broadcast will be, and I will also address what I know many of you are going to say to me. You promised that if you'd got the thing, you wouldn't leave red. Now you're a liar. You're a liar and everything. And also, I know, you'll crap all over me. I'll also address the I will also address the individuals in this business who will be glad to see me go. The comb-over boys. Actually, he's the only cat that's going to be glad to see me go, I think. And I want to mention the people in my life, in radio, in my career, who have had my back for a lot of years. I just want to do that. And then, you know, as we approach the final broadcast day, I'm not going to be maudlin every night rapping about this, believe me. But today it was announced that there was a press release. You might have seen it on the internet. It was on the Drudge Report. I got an email from Ann Coulter, so it must be true. Ann emailed me. She said, "You're leaving radio." I said, "Okay." I didn't know about that, but if you... Plus, I hear that she's looking real hot these days, and now that I'm on a TV show, maybe things... Okay, so I don't care if she's a conservative. What do I give a crap? Hey, man, why would you go out with her? She's conservative. How do you know when they're nude? How do you know when they're nude? All right, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
I'm taking some time tonight because I'm not even going to explain it. The fact is that I've announced I'm retiring from radio. And more to the point, I'm retiring from terrestrial radio. Now, some people may say, so you're going to go to satellite? No, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just telling you, as I said the last hour and a half, the terrestrial radio business, as it exists today, is not set up to support the kind of show that I do. It does not have the ability to implement a show like this. It is set up to market another kind of radio show. You might ask, well, what kind is that? Well, it's set up to market a show that is easily placed on a radio station where you don't really have to do much to support it. Just put it on the air and let it be on the air, and it'll sort of blend in with the rest of your programming. This radio show is distinctive, obviously. It's not going to blend in with anything. That doesn't blend in with anything. I remember they used to say to me, "We put you on a rock station, it'll kick ass." Yeah, it'll kick ass on a rock station, so long as there's some sensibility as to, you know, what it is. I mean, don't just throw it down. A cat's going to flip on the radio, and he's expecting to hear Hart's Magic Man for the 9 millionth time, and here I am doing Bobby Dooley voices. You know, you're going to have to say something. You got to say something to the people, don't you? Now, I'm going to tell you this. I don't have any malice in my heart. I've had a great time, man. I have. I mean, when I say malice in my heart, you know, over the years, you run into a lot of scumbags, naturally. I mean, in every walk of life, radio's got them. Hell, I might be one, as far as I know. Somebody may think I'm a scumbag. I don't think I ever torpedoed anybody's career. I know I've fired a couple of people. And if they think I'm a bad guy for it, I guess, you know, I apologize. But I had to fire you. You know, I mean, there's just a certain way I do my show. I can't do it any other way. And if either you get it or you don't. But I've had the good fortune in the time that I've been doing this radio show, 16 years, back to 1990, to meet just enough people who kept the forward momentum going. Just when I thought, man, there isn't anybody that really gets what I'm doing. I'd meet somebody and they'd roll with it. And the first guy that I met, and I've mentioned his name before, was a guy named Rich Galano, who's very angry at my wife tonight because she took a talk show on another station and she was working for him. Rich, I'm sorry. It's not, you know, she does what she wants. I can't, you know, I can't do anything with her, man. Anyway, Rich was the very first program director I ever met who actually got it about creating on the radio. He really understood it. He knew what you were up against. He helped and encouraged, and he's one of the smartest guys I know as a programmer. And if he wasn't so happy just sitting up there on the beach at the radio station in Ventura, he could have been a major, major program director in this business. I have no doubt in my mind he'd be in New York, Los Angeles, programming a talk station. That's how good, that's how smart, that's how perceptive he is. And that's how good he was for me when I was on the air. I mentioned Bob Green many times, the real Bob Green in Miami, my general manager. He's the only executive I ever met who really, like, would sit down and get into the whole nuts and bolts of creating with you. This was the general manager of the station. I got sued by the Miami Dolphins, and he walked in laughing. Now, you understand that when you get sued for $15 million, 99.999% of every general manager or any radio executive in America is A, going to leave something green on his leather chair in his office, B, walk over to the studio where you are, and C, fire you. He'll leave a green brick, walk, fire. Okay, those three things. Green brick, go to studio, fire disc jockey. Bob walked in laughing. Laughing. And hired an attorney, a damn good law firm, and we fought it, man. The radio station stood with me the whole way, and I really honestly believe that it's a landmark case, because what it was about doing a character voice. I was doing the voice of Brian Cox, who I have since come to respect very highly. But at the time, I thought he was a douchebag. And anyway, I'm kidding around. Well, you know I did, Brian. So anyway, so I'm doing his voice, but I thought it was landmark because we didn't disclaim it. I didn't say I'm not really Brian Cox. Now, his attorney posited that that was slander and misappropriation of his client's likeness. We argued that it was legitimate satire. And we went back and forth with this thing until it finally just got tossed out by the judge. The judge basically agreeing with us that he's a public personality. Yeah, but you really have people believing that you're really Brian Cox, don't you, Mr. Hendry? To which I responded, I don't know. Yes, but Mr. Hendry, isn't it true? This is in the deposition. Isn't it true that when you do those, you want people to really believe that it... I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Don't you want people to really... I don't remember. You don't remember, huh? Guy's face is getting red. Why did you do the voice of Brian Cox on WI? Yes, I did. Ah, so you were Brian Cox. No, I'm Phil Hendry. But don't you want people to believe that you're Brian Cox? When? Well, your radio, what do you mean, when? Well, in the morning, I'd like them to think I'm Phil Hendry. If they think I'm Brian Cox, I may not be able to get a room in a hotel. And on it went. So eventually, though, the court wouldn't hear it. And in its own little way, it became, I think, sort of a precedent. Because no matter where I go in this business, in radio, after that, I could say, I did that in Miami. I got sued for it, and it never got to trial. Now, that's what I thought I could do. But, you know, you understand that in a business where they're more... there's a lot of radio stations that want to get licensed, man. That's the number one thing. Backing up, you know, your talent, that's for another day. However, nonetheless, it was a lot of fun. Another person who is behind the scenes... She's our vice president of media relations, and she works here at the Premier Radio Networks, and she has, from the very beginning, been a cheerleader for this show. She's gotten us out in front of people whenever she could. She talked about us to everybody and anybody. She encouraged everybody and anybody to take our show to the next level. She would cajole. She would push. She would... come down and talk to me, talk about how funny the show was the night before, the bit that she liked, what could she do? She's talking to this person, she's talking to that person. And you'll find out what her name is. I'm kidding. Her name is Amir Forrester. Amir. Now, her name is Amir, not because she's like Arab, but because her parents were freaks. They were hippies, seriously. Amir's like a redheaded Irish chick, but her parents, because they'd been hiking through India or something. Seriously, man, I'm dead serious. They were like... let's call her Amir, okay? After the flowing waters of the nine Vishnu gods, or whatever. So that's her name. And I can't thank you enough, Amir, man. You, even today, she calls me up. She says, you know, what can I do for you, man? I said, well, a six-pack of Bud's a good start. We'll be right back with more Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
When I was in Atlanta, I had a friend there, a guy on the radio station. I didn't know it, but when I was a kid, I used to listen to him on KHJ because I was a radio freak, and we had a station here in L.A. called KHJ, Boss Radio. And his name was Gary Mack. That was his air name. And I didn't know that the Gary Mack that I met down in Atlanta, who was Gary McDowell, was that Gary Mack. All I knew was this guy was a really decent guy, and he had my back when I was down in Atlanta. I was at a very conservative radio station. It was my first major market gig in talk radio doing this weird shtick that I do. And believe me, I have a lot of fun on the radio, but it can be a lonely experience because when you get out of an office, let's say you get done playing a really fun game of football or baseball or basketball, or you've gotten done playing a really cool, fun video game, right? And you've had a blast. And you leave that room and there are people standing there ready to tear your head off for having so much fun. What were you thinking playing football? I thought, wasn't I supposed to have fun? Yes, we told you to have fun, but what are you doing? I played the video game. I was having, what is that? Sometimes that's the way it is in radio. I mean, you go in there and you do a show and you're like having a blast, man. And you walk off the air and the guy is standing there and he looks like he's about ready to have a baby calf. And the guy that I worked for in Atlanta, I'll never forget this guy because he did something that no general manager of any radio station will ever do again to me. In fact, he was the last guy to do this. He walked down the hall and he stared through the glass at me as if I was some kind of a mutant looking through the glass as I was doing my show. And I remember promising myself that nobody in the radio management game would ever walk down a hallway, look at me through the glass, or otherwise intimate that he's dissatisfied with the product, because what it does is it screws with your head and you can't do the show, right? And it was at that point that I decided, well, you better or worse, I'm not going to take any crap from anybody in management ever again. I'm just not going to. I mean, I'll be as friendly as I possibly can, but I'm not going to have a guy come down there. And this guy had like the blown up veins in his nose, which meant he was probably next to a jug till about 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, this cat is, you're looking at me, I'm working my ass off here, man. The only thing you're working off is a hangover. And I'll never get Gary says to me, he calls me up. He says, dude, I told you I'd give you the heads up. I said, what's up? He said, I'll never forget his words. He said, your deal here is going south, meaning I was going to get fired. I said, Gary, thank you for letting me know. And because he let me know, I was able to spend the next 4 weeks lining up another gig. And on top of that, I was able to read between the lines every time the, you know, people would come up to me and say, hey, Phil, are you interested in staying here at WSB? Because we'd like to continue with, all this crap. Anyway, I went up to Minneapolis with Jim Ashbrew, who's another friend of mine. He was the PD down in Atlanta. Thank you, Jim, by the way, for giving me that gig. I mean, honest to God, dude, thank you. I had somewhere to go, a major market, big station. You thought the show would be good on that station. You were right. We pulled some really good numbers, and we got a nice group of people listening to a station that up to that point only had listeners over the age of 112. And we were able to pull the demo down to around 100. By the time I left, their median age was about 96. So I think, 12 plus 4? That's 16 years I pulled it down. And I really mean it, Jim. Because, he went on vacation and the general manager of the station brought me in and he says, I don't know, I did some bit that he didn't dig. Once again, I thought it was a funny bit, but this cat was just so upset. He says, you're doing midnight to five Sunday morning. The guy was like punishing me. Are you ready for this? But the cat was giving me it because I did this bit on the air. I don't even remember what it was. But when Jim got back from vacation, I said, that guy pulled me into the office, man. He said that I did something, and he put me on midnight to five, and he says, don't worry, you're never going to have to talk to that guy again. I said, all right, because I'm really, and I started crying and weeping, and I buried my face in my hands, and he said, well, you get out of here. But he was right. I never had to talk to that guy again, and I never had to, and I never got punished again. I never got sent to the shed. I don't know what it was. I think it was something having to do with, I honestly, I don't know. But it was bad enough for this guy to flip out. So, and then I went to Miami and I met Bob, and I told you all that story. And I got out of there. The other person that I want to thank is a guy that you hear a lot about on this show. His name's David G. Hall, the real guy. David's over at CBS right now, and he works locally here in Los Angeles at KNX Radio. He's the smartest guy I know when it comes to stuff that is really kind of technical, but I needed the information. I needed knowledge, and it had to do with methodology and how to present bits in what hour and where the audience was, and he just really educated me a lot. He also is the smartest cat that I know on radio because he made my show work on a radio station that had Dr. Laura and it had Rush Limbaugh and it had, I think at one point we had Dr. Dean Adele, right? And also Phil Hendry. I mean, this guy is such a good programmer. He had a talk station that had me and Laura on the same station and it worked. And it worked great, man. I mean, we kicked ass. And then I got to thank people like Matt Groening, who was the first guy from the Hollywood community to call. I'm not saying that why didn't the rest of them call? I'm just saying he called and said he liked the show. He invited us to a table read of The Simpsons. He was gracious. And every time anybody's ever asked him for a quote about our show, he's been happy to give one. Matt Drudge, who I'm saying this only because Matt follows the show. And anytime anything happens of significance, he'll put a little link up on his website. I mean, that's worth a lot of money. People that, you know, like the show and will stick their neck out for it. That's what I'm talking about. And even guys that you don't know their names, but I remember them. Pete Forgione. The guy's out in the desert right now working at a radio station in Palm Springs. I knew Pete in Orlando. And when they wanted to can my ass down there when I was like 22 years old coming in, I was the freak on the staff. You know, I'm working at some radio station that's playing Helen Reddy and Tony Orlando and Dawn. And I'm walking in there, with the reefer scent still kind of circulating around my hair. And I'm walking into this radio station, 22 years old. And everybody's, who is this freak? And Pete would say, no, leave Phil alone. Come on, your kid's okay. He's working midnight to six. What do you want? And Jimmy Dale Rittenour and Telly up in Minneapolis, they called me up. They said, good luck, Phil, in Miami. And Danny Hertzgard did. Maria, my wife. I mean, the people that say to you, don't give up, man. I mean, this is really good what you're doing. Keep going with it. You know, the business will open up. It'll expand. People will get it. Something will happen. Brian Glicklick, who always treated me with respect, and I appreciated Brian, would say to me, you know what? Brian's in our MIS. What do you call that with Brian? What is that anyway, Brian? Where do you work at? What is that called, Brian? The computer area, man? The internet thing? Brian would say to me, something's going to happen, man. Something's going to break. Something is going to bust you out mainstream. Because we've had a very successful show, but what I always wanted was I wanted that mainstream breakout success. And it just came to me, like I said, within the last 9-10 months, the mainstream breakout success that I want, I may have to go to another medium. Because at the end of the day, it isn't so much that I'm on the radio, it's that I got all these things going on in my head. And I got all these different ideas, and I want to put them out there somehow. And it's increasingly frustrating, you know, when you find that your options are more and more limited. You know, what do you want to go hunt? I want to hunt an elephant. All right, well, we have some duck over here. No, just hunt the duck. I know I'll hunt the duck and everything, but I know you want to go hunt an elephant. And we will hunt an elephant. We will. How many times am I going to go shoot duck? Just go. All right. There's another 10 duck. Great. You know, so it's all of those things. I mean, I'm using these analogies. Just it's you find a guy. All right. I'll hunt the duck for a while. But you know what? Today is the day that I wanted to tell you that I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to bag an elephant. Now, here's the thing, and this is where it applies to all of us. You know, life, I don't care how long I live. I don't give a crap. I just got to make sure that whatever the hell it is I'm doing, man, I'm doing something, okay? I don't give a crap if I die tomorrow. But I got to always be moving forward, and I don't want to turn into a scumbag. You know, I don't want to be a liar, and I want to have integrity, and I want to be as good to people as I can be. But I also want to protect myself and my family. And I know that you can't be that to all people. I know that some people are asking for it and they're going to get it. But I want to be as much as I can. When I go to my grave, I want to be able to say I had a little bit of character. And the other thing is that I didn't fear doing what I needed to do. And I said on the show one time, I can't, and this is going to get me killed someday, I know, but I can't see something happen that's wrong and not do something about it. I'm the kind of guy, and like I said, it'll probably get me killed. I'm the kind of guy that when I see somebody being abused or otherwise maltreated, even if it's a stranger, I tend to intercede. And someday I will have overstepped my bounds, or as Oliver Hardy said, bound over my steps. But I got to do something if it's telling me that, you know, you got to, what is it? I got to do what I got to do.
Yeah, that's it.
There you go. That's all right. I'll take a break right now because they want me to break for these commercial announcements. But when we come back, the date that I'm going to.
Oh, will you come on?
I'm going to say the date that is my last broadcast.
Now, yeah, you say that. You won't do it.
Oh, really? How much do you want to bet?
When are you going to do it?
I'm not telling you.
Lion turd. You're just a turd.
God, what a retard, man. Get that plate changed in your head. I think there's rust on it. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Now, the opportunities that present themselves in satellite radio are a completely different kind of an opportunity that presents itself in terrestrial radio. It's completely different in many respects. One of them being they are a subscription-based business, as you know. And what they look for is a piece of programming's ability to draw subscribers. Now, we're all at least that educated from Howard's experience drumming up business for Sirius, and he drummed up quite a bit. Now, can you draw subscribers? We, on our radio show, have done something that has attracted the interest of the satellite business to a degree, and it is this. We have a pay website, as you guys know. You have to subscribe to it. And we've been able to gather close to 15,000 subscribers per month. Now, at $6.95 a month, I think that roughly, I looked at the numbers. Over the years, it has steadily grown to the point where we're now close to about $1 million in revenue every year just from our website. Now, that's not a number that you can ignore if you're in the business of attracting subscribers. The reason why that's interesting to us, to those of us in the Phil Henry Show camp, is that it tells us we don't have to be reliant necessarily upon the terrestrial world of advertising supported broadcasting. You have a challenge there. And the challenge is not only are you on terrestrial radio, which is regulated by the FCC, which means that even if the FCC thinks you're doing okay, you've got some very nervous people at the top of a lot of these companies who still want to kind of keep a lid on you. And then you have an advertiser that you have to keep happy. Now, when we come back, I'll give you the exact date that I am going to be leaving the... I'm kidding. We're just taking another break. I'll be right back and tell you more about this whole... I'm going to educate you a little bit more about the satellite business, and then I'd like to ask for investors. I'm kidding. All right. Anyway, we'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I'm going to tell you the end date for this radio broadcast, when we will be off the air. It's not for a while, but it's not forever either. It's coming up. And I will also tell you who will be replacing me in this chair. You got it, Alan Colmes. Now, actually, I have no idea. You'll have to call your local radio station or call Premier. I don't know who they're thinking of, but I'm sure it'll be a quality person. All right, coming up, when am I going off the air? We'll be announcing that, sponsored by Calcan, kitten and cat foods.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.